beans, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new movies All the Money in the World, Molly's Game, and Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, the best and worst movies of 2017, the box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring the Lego Ninjago movie. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
It has been a somewhat slow news week after Christmas here. I was actually on vacation for part of the Christmas holiday, went on a cruise, had a great time with the family, got away, and had to come back to the frigid temperatures in the Midwest. So, but it is time to get back in the grind and wrap up 2017 in terms of film with a couple interesting news stories. AMC Stubbs had sent out a survey, and some people had noticed this on Twitter. They were asking, where do you like to sit in the theater? And a lot of people, of course, like to sit, you know, smack dab in the middle. And then there was also a question that said, essentially, would you pay more for preferred seating? And that got some people to speculate. Now that a lot of these places have updated their seating to those Barca loungers where you buy the actual seat rather than just general admission, the question is, are they going to start charging more for the better seats, so to speak? You know, sort of like, you know, the floor seats at a basketball game cost a heck of a lot more than the ones up in the nosebleed sections. Now, one person had speculated that, well, maybe they're looking to discount the front row and the aisle seats where are not the most popular ones. Don't hold your breath for that. If they're going to make a move, they're not going to suddenly just cut prices. They are going to try and increase prices. I think this is a terrible idea because that doesn't get people back to the cinemas. The problem that movie theaters are having is people aren't going out to the movie theaters as often to see the movies. Sure, you got movies like Star Wars, which is making tons and tons of money. And you're like, this next summer, you got Infinity War coming out. You're going to have plenty of people going to see that. The big, huge movies, the movies that make $100 million or more, which there's a lot more of them nowadays than there were 20, 30 years ago. But even then, the movies that make $100 million or more, you get a couple dozen of those a year. There's a lot of movies that come out that don't even come close to that. And that's the lifeblood of the theaters, not of Hollywood. Hollywood's lifeblood is their blockbusters and their franchises where they can net hundreds of millions of dollars per movie. Theaters rely on a steady stream of diverse entertainment. And not just the blockbusters, because they don't get much from the ticket sales of those, and they just want the concessions fees. But the problem is, these smaller movies, people are just waiting for video. Part of it is you've had a shorter window from theatrical to video, which has been shortening ever since it started. I remember it used to be more than a year. You'd have to wait for something to come on video cassette. Now you can get it on DVD. Well, you know, sometimes there are some movies that are in limited release that you can get on demand before they even hit the theaters or come to your hometown. But most regular releases, 2-3 months tops. I mean, Star Wars, as much as that movie's making right now, that thing's going to be out on DVD and Blu-ray by March or April. And that's just how the cycle works. So I think the idea of charging even more, but basically say, well, now you're going to have to pay for better seats. You're going to get one of two things happening. You're going to get people just driven more away from the theaters because you're essentially raising prices on certain tickets. Or what you're going to see is you're going to start seeing people paying for the crappy seats and then just going and taking a middle seat in a theater that's not full, because it's not the big budget movies that you're trying to drive people to. You're trying to drive them to the ones that have only 10 people in the audience in the first place. So this is a terrible idea for AMC or anyone to do, because all I think it's going to do is to give another people another reason to stay home from the theaters. The other piece of news I think that's interesting is there's a huge backlash, and then a backlash to a backlash, and then a backlash to the backlash of the backlash. backlash for Star Wars. There was, of course, a big anti-fan reaction that happened after, you know, sort of like there's a group of people that just kind of want Star Wars to be what it was in those first three movies. And it's not going to be. It never will be. And you're never going to make a Star Wars movie that pleases everybody. The closest they got was The Force Awakens, and even then that got a backlash because it was always too nostalgic. Or you're never going to please everybody, and I think Disney knows that, and they're not stupid. And there was a backlash, but I think part of the backlash was just it's a small group of people that did game the system. They were able to flood IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes with negative reviews from the audience side, where there's no vetting. There's absolutely no requirements. You just have to be at a computer, and sometimes people even set up bots on the computer to tank the audience score pretty significantly. But if you look at like the critical score, it does well. If you look at the cinema score, which is actually a polled version of showing how much people like the movie, it's still in the A, I think it's A minus range. So it's not the A plus, but it's still in a very acceptable range for this movie. But I find it amazing that there's so many people trying to convince people that it's a bad movie. And then there's everybody now, the backlash to that is that people say, no, it's a good movie and here's why. And you know what? Just go see a doggone movie and enjoy it or don't. The monster box office, I think, shows that it's popular with audiences. And that doesn't mean that it's a sign of quality, because God knows the Transformers movies do incredibly well and those things are garbage. But Star Wars is what it is. And I think they're still building in this one. And it's comical at times, but it's also kind of depressing to watch people get so upset when somebody doesn't agree with them. That's my life. That's the story of my life. I've learned to accept it for myself. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Ocean's 8, opens on June 8th.
How long would it take you to make 7 pieces of jewelry?
5 or 6 hours.
How long if I told you you didn't have to live with your mother anymore?
Less.
In 3.5 weeks, the Met will be hosting its annual ball. And we are going to rob it. Not the ball itself.
Oh, the neck of Daphne Kluger.
Valued at over $100 million.
$150 million, actually.
I was originally skeptical about this movie. I still am quite a bit, mainly because it's a gimmick movie. And I think it's less of the replacement gimmick movie that Ghostbusters was. Because the problem with Ghostbusters, part of it was the script wasn't very good, and it all seemed to hinge on the fact that they said, okay, let's just do the stunt casting with girls as Ghostbusters instead of guys, and nothing against girls, and it's not that girls can't be funny, it's just the script wasn't very good, regardless of whether it was a woman or a man delivering the jokes, it just didn't click, and maybe Ghostbusters is just authentically an 80s thing the way they've done in the past. And I feel that this falls into that whole thing where, of course, they wanted to do an Expendables movie with all the women. Now they've got Ocean's movie with women instead of men. I just want to see an authentically good heist movie. And this looks like it could be that way. I am a little concerned it's directed not by Soderbergh, but by Gary Ross, the guy who did, I believe he did the Mockingjay movie. So, you know, we'll see. Hopefully it works and is in the spirit of the Ocean's movies. The next one I want to hit is Sicario 2, Soldado. I don't know if I'm saying that right. And that opens on June 29th.
How would you define terrorism? The current definition is any individual or group that uses violence to achieve a political goal. The administration believes that the drug cartels fit that definition.
You want to see this thing through? I'm going to have to get dirty.
Sicario was my favorite film a couple years ago when it came out. I love the movie, and I think a lot of that had to do with Denis Villeneuve and his direction. This is not directed by Villeneuve, so I don't know quite what to expect. This just feels like it could be a direct-to-video release that just gets a bigger release because it has some names retained in it. That is it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about All the Money in the World and the best films of 2017. Because we can! Oh, 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 oh. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr, big fat New Year special, and we are going to talk about the really one of it's arguably not a new movie, I guess. It is All the Money in the World. It was originally, I think, supposed to come out December 20th, and I think it got moved to December 22nd, which was last Friday, but then it got moved again to Christmas Day, so technically it's this week's release, even though it's been open since Christmas. The grandson of oil tycoon J. Paul Getty is kidnapped, and his mother desperately tries to scrape together the ransom, while Getty himself uses his own methods.
My former father-in-law only buys the best. Time for you to do whatever it is he pays you to do. Let's hope you're half as good as everything else he's bought.
We need to pay the ransom, Mr. Getty.
I do not have the money to spare.
No one has ever been richer than you are at this moment. What would it take for you to feel secure?
More.
I'm gonna find your son.
Obviously, the most notable thing about this film is that it stars Christopher Plummer as J. Paul Getty, and it was originally starring Kevin Spacey as J. Paul Getty, to the point they were done with the film. It was finished, and they had trailers out there, and I remember seeing, oh gosh, it was like a month and a half ago, I saw a trailer for this with Kevin Spacey in it. So I can only judge that trailer for Kevin Spacey's performance. But I will say this. Christopher Plummer was a better choice from the beginning. I mean, yeah, this was going to be Kevin Spacey's vehicle, but the clips of him as J. Paul Getty, he just seemed like a guy in his 50s who was made up to look really old, whereas Christopher Plummer is indeed really old, so he worked better in the scenes. In comparison, I just think Christopher Plummer would have been a better choice from the beginning, because then he just didn't feel like somebody pretending to be an old character. I don't know. It was a weird casting choice to put Kevin Spacey in there in the first place, because I don't think he fit. This is directed by Ridley Scott, and Ridley Scott blows hot and cold for me. I mean, he has done some great movies, of course, obviously Alien and Blade Runner, those original ones, but I also like Prometheus. The Martian were really quite good. Movies like Gladiator were good, but then he's done movies that are kind of, well, you know, like Robin Hood and Body of Lies, and there's a minefield of really bad Ridley Scott films that everybody seems to forget about every time he comes out with a movie. So it's not a big surprise for this to play soft. You know, I mentioned Body of Lies. That's what it reminds me of, where a movie where it had some interesting ideas and it had some decent scenes, but it just was kind of a boring film. And honestly, gun to my head, I wouldn't be able to tell you what happens in Body of Lies, even though that movie came out like 10 years ago or less. And that's what I feel about with this film. You watch the trailers, it feels like it's going to be a lickety-split, insane action movie. It is not. It is a slow burn. It is patterned after sort of like 70s thrillers. It never really takes off. There are some good acting moments with Christopher Plummer. But, you know, Mark Wahlberg is kind of out of place. He does not feel like he's out of the 70s, even though he's done movies where he was in Boogie Nights. He was fantastic as part of the 70s. He just doesn't click in this movie. And Michelle Williams is at times laughable, kind of doing this weird Katharine Hepburn impression throughout the film. Now, I don't know if that's maybe the way this woman really talked, but I'm not a big Michelle Williams fan, so it just kind of was mediocre for me. Ultimately, I was not a big fan of this movie. It's more notable for the story around it and the replacement of Kevin Spacey with Christopher Plummer. But I mean, the best thing I can say about this movie is somebody says all the money in the world within the first 11 minutes of the movie, which was thrilling for me. But overall, I'm going to have to say that All the Money in the World kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Now, instead of doing an individual review, I'm going to list my top three movies of 2017. You can, of course, go to fatguysatthemovies.com and see my full list, my best films of 2017, the worst films of 2017. But here is a preview of my top three. Coming in at number three is a very recent one with a tender love story between species.
She deaf?
Mute, sir. She can hear you.
You clean that lab, you get out.
This may very well be the most sensitive asset ever to be housed in this facility.
You may think that thing looks human. stands on two legs, right?
This creature is intelligent, capable of language, of understanding emotions.
That's right, The Shape of Water, Guillermo del Toro's love story between a woman who cleans the floors and the creature from the Black Lagoon, essentially. One of the just a beautiful love story that breaks taboos and it's not afraid to do stuff different, but also fantastic performances, not just by Sally Hawkins, but by Doug Jones as the, not the new senator, but the actor as the Gill Man. And of course, Michael Shannon, Richard Jenkins, a great cast for this film. And it's a lovely, wonderful movie, that will actually kind of melt your heart. The next one on the list, number two coming in, is the third in a new series. And, it came out earlier this summer.
We are not savages. Apes fight only to survive.
Years from now, your children will ask you, what did you do in the greatest war? And you can tell them, I fought to protect this world.
That's right, War for the Planet of the Apes. I loved Rise of the Planet of the Apes. I wasn't totally wild about Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, but bringing it into War for the Planet of the Apes, I thought this one was a fantastic dramatic film that dealt with a lot of issues of stuff like everything from manifest destiny to racism to war and peace and interpersonal struggles. There's so much that this movie has to say, and I thought it was a great way to end that sort of three-part Planet of the Apes series. It did much better preserving quality than the original Planet of the Apes series back in the late 60s and early 70s. And now for the number one, the best movie of 2017, another recent release. It just shows my love of terrible films and what passion it takes to make even those.
So there's this guy, Johnny, a true American hero, to be played by me. He has it all. Good luck, many friends, and also maybe Johnny is a vampire. We'll see.
This set of the alleyway looks exactly like the real alleyway.
That's right.
Well, why don't we just shoot in the real alleyway?
Because it's a real Hollywood movie.
Action!
I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark.
This is James Franco's acting, directing, writing of the Tommy Wiseau story, also the Greg Sestero story as well, played by his brother, David. But this is a fantastic movie along the lines of films like American Movie or Ed Wood that show the passion of filmmakers who may not have talent that matches their passion. But it's a fantastic movie that shows how movies get made, even if they're terrible. And if you've ever worked on an independent film set, it's worth seeing. You know, James Franco, not everything he touches is great, but this one was. Other movies that made my top 10 list include The Post, which isn't even out yet, but it's still a fantastic movie, by Steven Spielberg, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, It, Thor Ragnarok, Last Flag Flying, The Beguiled, and Blade Runner 2049, and a couple honorable mentions to Mark Felt, The Man Who Brought Down the White House, and Kong, Skull Island. That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Molly's Game and the worst films of 2017.
Oppan Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. Oppan Gangnam Style.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews of the new movies. This actual one is actually new. It comes out this weekend, and it is Molly's Game. Jessica Chastain plays a woman who ran one of the biggest high-stakes poker games in the country before she was targeted by the authorities.
You ran games in L.A. for roughly 8 years?
Yeah.
And then you ran games in New York for roughly 2.
I haven't run a game in over 2 years, not to spoil the ending, but that's when the government raided my game and took all of my money, assuming all of it was made illegally, which it wasn't.
You had meetings in L.A. about your book and life rights.
I did.
You spent 8 years running the world's most exclusive, glamorous, and decadent man cave.
Any offers?
Guarantee the publishers certain elements, then I can get you $1.5 million.
What kind of elements?
I'm just curious as to why you passed on what would appear to be the only way out you have.
You have to use real names.
There seems to be a Jessica Chastain arrested courtroom something drama that comes out every year. They did one last year. I don't remember what it was. She was a gun, anti-gun lobbyist movie. I can't even remember what movie that was. It was terrible. This one is sort of the Jessica Chastain award bait movie that's, I think, going to get no traction as well this year. This is most significant because it is Aaron Sorkin's directorial debut. Now, if you don't know who Aaron Sorkin is, you've probably at least seen something he's done. He's very famous for doing The West Wing on TV. He wrote scripts for The Social Network. He wrote scripts for Moneyball. He's done a lot of dramatic films, and he's best known for, I mean, like hard-hitting, fast-talking, walk-and-talk dialogue. I get that is his forte, and it's funny because at times he seems to try to stretch out of it, but at other times he doubles down on his dialogue. And he's adapting a book by Molly Bloom, who is this character played by Jessica Chastain. So it's essentially, it's not really a biopic as much as it is a profile on her by her. And in the process of doing it, he has so much narration, and it's just Jessica, even you hear it in the trailer, just she talks throughout the whole movie. It's nonstop, unnecessary dialogue. It's basically him adapting what's written in the book as narration. And narration already is, it can be a real crutch for some writers. And I really feel that because he was directing this and he didn't give this script to somebody else, he retained more of his dialogue and retained more of the narration than he needed to. This movie could have been great without narration. In fact, I think it would have been better without narration. Give me the walk and talk. Give me the hard-hitting, fast-paced dialogue that you expect from Aaron Sorkin. Just don't give me Jessica Chastain saying, well, I went down to the store and I got a coffee while she's walking out of the store to get a coffee. It's overkill. And that's the problem with this film. So I think while there's certain elements that are very professional, and it's clear that Sorkin has plenty of experience, he's not as good at trimming down his own stuff when he's in total control. The other thing is I'm not a Jessica Chastain fan. I'm sorry. I'm not. I never have been. And I know there are people out there who just love Jessica Chastain. And there are people who think she's the greatest actress on the planet. I don't. There's, in fact, a few movies that I've seen her in that I've actually really enjoyed her in. I like The Help. She played an absurd character in The Help, but I thought that was her best performance. Everything else I've ever seen her in, she's too dour, she's too serious. I just don't buy her. I feel she's playing house. And I mean, that's nothing against Jessica Chastain. I just don't think she's a good actress. You know, it's sort of like there's people out there, and I'm not talking about like politically motivated people when I say this, but I mean, there are people out there, like my wife doesn't particularly like Meryl Streep. No matter what role she's in, she just doesn't like Meryl Streep. And I can appreciate that. I feel the same way about Jessica Chastain. You know, she may be considered the best actor on the planet right now. I don't see it. I don't see it at all. There's just a lot of shots of her looking serious and trying to be badass, and it just doesn't work. And ultimately, the problem with the Molly's Game is it's too sympathetic for the character. Molly Bloom seems like a sleazebag. No matter how you cut her, it seems like she seems like a sleazebag. You do any sort of research on her, she seems like a sleazebag. And even this movie, she seems like a sleazebag, but they're trying to be like, she just had to take cocaine because she needed to keep the energy. She just had to get involved in this because she needed the money. She just had to, she's just being nice. And, they're just victimizing her. No, she was a sleazebag who ran an ugly poker ring and got busted for it. So I'm going to have to say that Molly's Game sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. One of my favorite times of the year is the end of the year because I get to vent about some of the worst movies I've seen in the calendar year, and I've got a whole bunch of them. So I'm going to do the countdown to the worst movie of 2017, starting with, like all of them, a movie that should have never been made, but could have been made so much better, but they decided to go with crazy raunchy without putting any sort of heart or plot or character or script that made any coherent sense or likable characters or anything. Well, here it is.
We're staring into the abyss here. It's up to us to restore the Baywatch brand.
Training begins at 0600.
What is it that you think we do here?
Prevent people from getting sunburned, occasionally stop them from drowning.
Drugs.
murder, dead body on our beach. We're going to have to do what Baywatch does best.
Baywatch, which flopped. Nobody wanted to see it. Critics hated it. Audience seemed to hate it, too. The characters are unlikable. And this is the problem when you have a comedy that's having people do crazy things. You can't just have them acting like jerks at college. I mean, we all knew jerks at college where they're not funny. And that's essentially what this is. You know, just drinking and being obnoxious and being promiscuous sex everywhere. Like, they had the one character of CJ, and there's no depth to her. She's just attractive. She looks great in a bikini, but that was it. This movie is terrible, and it failed miserably, as it should have, at the box office. The next one on the list of the worst movies of 2017, number two, comes in as a big number two that was a number two.
I want you back. I'm not very good at this.
Okay, fine. I will have dinner with you because I'm hungry. But we are only talking, and that is it.
Are you happy? I've never been happier.
Do you think you're the first woman who's tried to save him?
That's right. 50 Shades Darker was the sequel to 50 Shades of Grey. We, of course, got 50 Shades Free coming up next year, which I don't think is going to do that well, considering what a drop-off 50 Shades Darker was. This movie, nothing happens in it. It serves as no other reason than like maybe like a 5-minute character development between movies, and it doesn't even have the lurid naughtiness of the horny housewife trying to read a book about S&M. I mean, even the S&M stuff is dialed back so much, and it doesn't understand, like the other one, it doesn't understand kink. It doesn't understand. It's this weird puritanical nonsense of how damaged anybody is who likes anything remotely kinky. I mean, it is the most backwards written thing anyways, and there's nothing happens. It's boring. Now, speaking of boring movies, here's the worst movie of 2017. One of the hardest movies to sit through. Honestly, I was squirming in my seat because I was so bored and uninspired about what was going on the screen, even though there was a lot of stuff happening.
It started as a legend. One of the greatest of all.
1,000 years we've kept it hidden.
To protect Earth from what was destined to arrive.
Optimus Prime. You destroyed your home. Do you seek redemption?
That's right. Transformers, The Last Night. Michael Bay is still making Transformers movies. He has not moved out of his sandbox, which I think is a litter box at this point. Yeah, they still make money, but if you notice, even the American returns are tanking on this. The only thing that's saving these are overseas. Send Michael Bay to China. Let him make movies in China that are garbage, that don't make any sense, that have no character development whatsoever. And then weirdly sexualize like a 14-year-old girl in this movie just should not have been made. It is in a year that King Arthur came out. This is the most incoherent King Arthur movie out there. So yeah, Transformers The Last Night, worst movie of 2017. Others on the list: Sleepless with Jamie Foxx, terrible film from earlier in the year. Leap, which is that animated film about ballerinas. Woodshock is boring. Snatched with Amy Schumer is terrible. And then The Snowman. I gave you all the clues, Mr. Police, but you still let me release this movie. That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring the Lego Ninjago movie.
Shake that.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr, wrapping up the show for the final show of 2017, getting ready to head into 2018 like a steam engine of awesome. But first, let's wrap up the last reviews we got for this year. The one I want to talk about right now is Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool. Annette Bening plays has-been actress Gloria Graham in the final years of her life, featuring a romance with a local boy in Liverpool.
That's Gloria Graham. Big name in black and white films.
Proper star she was. I recognise that pout. Won an Oscar too.
Miss Graham, is everything okay?
I spoke to the doctor. told me what's wrong with you.
Could you take me to Liverpool? I could get better there.
This is the kind of movie that I get a lot of at the end of each year. This is what I call an award bait movie. This exists for no other reason than to attempt to win an award for somebody in the movie. And it's Annette Bening in this case. She's been doing pushes recently. She did 20th Century Women last year and really tried to get some notice with that. And nothing against Annette Bening as an actress. I mean, she's fine. I mean, she's never been my favorite, but I don't have anything against her. But this is so clearly a vehicle for her to win an award, because this has no appeal to anybody in the mainstream whatsoever. It reminds me of the movie A Single Man, which starred Colin Firth. That movie was so clearly just a piece for him to win an award, and he won. That was such a grab. I mean, even though it was a good performance, and even though that was an interesting movie, that's what I feel about this film. It's based on a book, and it is based on a real person, Gloria Grant. Most people don't know who she is nowadays, because she died in the 70s. But Gloria Grant was an actress of old Hollywood, like black and white actress, most recognizable to your average person if you've seen It's a Wonderful Life, and many people have, and especially recently, because we just got past Christmas and a lot of people watch it. She played Violet, the cute sort of snappy blonde that had a thing for George Bailey. She was the one she ends up becoming in the Pottersville version of It's a Wonderful Life. She becomes a town trollop. But that's who she is. Now, she actually won an Oscar. She did other things. But this is the later years of her life. And it's essentially just a character study. It's her, and you've got Jamie Bell playing this kid that she has a relationship with. And I say kid. I'm not, she wasn't like a cradle robber or anything like that. I mean, he was in his 20s, maybe early 30s, and she was in her 50s. So there was one of those May-December romances, but completely appropriate. I mean, we're not talking, she would have had no problem running for Congress in a thing like that. So this is just a spotlight on her. And it's not even like Annette Bening does a bad job. I mean, she does a fine job with the role. I was just wholly bored with the character. It was, it's meant to be this touching relationship, but it's just so deliberate. Just there for Annette Bening to win some awards, and I don't even think she's going to get noticed for this one, because there's so many other movies and they're dropping it like right before the end of the year. I've heard very little buzz about this, but who knows? You might see get some nominations here and there. It's just boring. I get annoyed with the characters, because whenever you're dealing with real life characters, they can be stubborn and stupid. And I've got enough stubborn and stupid people in my life that I have to deal with in real life on a daily basis that I don't want to have to struggle with that in the movies that I watch. So ultimately, I'm going to have to say Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Box office. Well, you know, the box office has been dominated by Star Wars for the last couple weeks. It's going to probably continue to be dominated by Star Wars at least for this week. I would not be surprised if it continues to be dominated by Star Wars next week too, because I think Insidious: The Last Key is the only movie. I mean, Star Wars over Christmas weekend, not including Christmas, it made over $70 million. So, I mean, it's still going to be making $30 million or $30 to $40 million this week. Is going to be making $20 million the following week. It's going to be still a couple weeks before Star Wars falls off the top of the heap. And that's not a big surprise. What's funny is Star Wars is not making as much as The Force Awakens, but it's still doing fine. I mean, heading into the weekend, Star Wars The Last Jedi was just under $1 billion. So it's fine. It is making its money back. It's not going to match the money that Force Awakens did, but you're never going to get that nostalgia the same at this point. The other ones, like, I think All the Money in the World is they're all just kind of flying under this radar. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. This is one that came out a couple weeks ago. I didn't get a chance to review it on the show. I wanted to cover it on the show because it's a fun little movie, and that is the Lego Ninjago movie. A young ninja tries to save his city from a legendary bad guy who also happens to be his father. Sound familiar?
All right, guys, let's get Garmadon!
Where did that come from?
Hello, Dad.
Lloyd?
That's right, and it's Lloyd, Dad.
It's okay, Lloyd. Nobody's parents are perfect.
Yeah, but I feel like there's more to Garmadon that I need to know.
To understand your future, you must go back to your ninja roots. Your dad was a ninja too. Are you ready to risk your life for Ninjago?
Ninjago!
First of all, the Blu-ray comes with some like mini movies and additional elements that you expect from all the Lego movies. Well, I mean, there's been three. There's been the Lego movie. There's the Lego Batman movie back in February. And now you have the Lego Ninjago movie. So it has the bonus features and the fun parts. And it has the commentary, the stuff you'd expect from these Lego movies. So it kind of ticks off all those in a chart of whether or not it's worth catching the disc physical media or just getting a digital copy on demand. But let's talk about the movie. This is the third Lego movie. And I saw a note in, I think it was probably like Wikipedia because I'm lazy and I don't check a whole lot of sources. But Wikipedia notes that it is a slumping, you know, continuing diminished returns for these Lego movies. And I don't necessarily think it's because of the quality. I think it has to do with the subject matter. The Lego movie covered all of pop culture. And it was the first, and it was surprising, and it was managing to deal with not just Legos, but all the other pop culture references, the superheroes and the Star Wars and all that stuff about Legos that Lego is branded with, that connects with the kids in the audience, but also connected with the parents in their 30s and their 40s and even in their 50s, people who played with this stuff when they were a kid. So it happened to hit nostalgia and current events at the same time, which really propelled the Lego movie into a huge thing. Plus, it was an entertaining as heck movie. The Lego Batman movie narrowed it a little bit because it was, in essence, a Batman movie. So if you didn't want to see a Batman movie, you didn't care. If all you cared about was Star Wars and not Batman, the Lego Batman movie wasn't a big thing. So the Lego Batman movie certainly made plenty of money and it was well loved. But the Lego Ninjago movie, the thing is, Ninjago's not a terribly well-known property if you're under 20. You know, my son's 16, my oldest son's 16, and I think he may have been of age, you know, little kid when Ninjago was really starting to develop and become aware. But somebody, you know, like parents don't understand the Ninjago storyline. They don't understand the background. I mean, a lot of kids love ninjas, and that's basically what it's spinning off of. But, you know, it's just the branded ninja product of Lego. And so it's sort of like, you know, Power Rangers or something like that. But it's not like you had people in their 30s playing with the stuff when they were kids. And I think that's the biggest thing, is it's just out of touch with its audience. It has some clever moments. It has some funny moments. But there's so much that has to work within the established Ninjago storyline that it doesn't break outside of that niche genre or even just the niche story and characters that you have. So that's, I think, the struggle. I don't think that it's any better or worse than say the Lego Batman movie. It's just more accessible. It's just the Lego Batman movie was way more accessible to most people who saw the film. Whereas the Ninjago movie, unless you know something about Ninjago, it's going to be kind of inaccessible, but it's still a fun little movie. It's cute. It's great for kids. I showed it to my son and Cody the Destroyer, who's 3.5, and he loved it. I mean, it's a very engaging movie. So I'm going to have to say the Lego Ninjago movie Blu-ray totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Other releases this week include Flatliners, Brawl in Cell Block 99, and The Mountain Between Us. And that is it for the show. That is it for 2017. Next week, we're starting a brand new year with a January sewer featuring Insidious, The Last Key. And until then, Happy New Year, and have a fat time at the movies.